Celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame has defeated Louisville 104-101 in five overtimes.
Run! Brian Stavisky! It's a ball game and the Irish will play for another day!
But to the Notre Dame family, I can't say anything except I've been blessed.
The Penn Kingsmen, 5A. State champs.
I think anytime you have a team with Skylar Diggins at the point, you better not count us out.
The Indianapolis Colts select Quentin Nelson.
Charlie Weiss's tenure as Notre Dame's football coach has come to an end.
South Bend, Washington has etched its name into Hoosier hysteria history.
Out of the 160 minor league teams, South Bend will be the best.
Three and he hits. Demetrius Jackson.
Score, Marshawn! 4-2 Bruins.
Brian Kelly, the new head coach at Notre Dame.
The Cubs win the World Series!
They score! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The Clay Colonials win the state championship. They are living a dream.
Enrique Ogunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat for this Monday, December the 9th of 2019, presented by our title sponsor, Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. This holiday season, put hope on the table for those in need. Find out how at feedindiana.org. 8 minutes after the top of the hour, I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett alongside Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. We welcome you to this installment of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, and the Irish now have a bowl opponent.
30 out of the shotgun, and he'll off play action, look to throw it. He fires to the left side for Kohler, and a leaping catch for the touchdown. Charlie Kohler has a touchdown reception against Texas Tech for the second consecutive year. Out of the shotgun, Purdy. He looks. He delivers over the middle. Leaping catch, Charlie Kohler, another touchdown. Kohler with his second touchdown of the day. And his third in the last two seasons against Texas Tech. Cyclones already leading at 14-0. Purdy rolls left, fires to the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown by LaMichael Pedway.
That was from the Iowa State Radio Network, a big day for the Cyclones against Texas Tech earlier this year, and it will be Notre Dame and Iowa State first ever meeting, and it will be in the Camping World Bowl, December 28th, a noon kickoff on 96.1 WSBT. Hopefully it will be a beautiful day down in Orlando. So the bowl season is upon us. The college football playoffs are set, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. But right now, let's focus on this Notre Dame-Iowa State game for a couple of moments. We have Irish basketball conversation to get to, a stunning loss to Boston College on Saturday, dropping the Irish to 0-2 and leaving us with a lot of questions about where this season could end up for Coach Bray's squad. But we begin with football talk. Iowa State 7-5 this year, a 5-4 record in the Big 12 Conference. They lost their five games by a total of 20 points, an 18-17 loss at home to the Iowa Hawkeyes, a close game at Baylor, but Iowa State came up short to the Bears 23-21, and Iowa State lost to Oklahoma State 34-27, and then a thriller in Norman as Oklahoma edged Iowa State 42-41, and then Iowa State wrapped up the year by falling to Kansas State 27-17. Their best win, I guess we have to go with Texas. They beat the Longhorns in Ames 23-21. The Iowa State Cyclones scored 409 points this year, allowed 304. And Eric, as we start looking at this Iowa State football team, it is a football team that loves to put the pigskin in the air, and it all starts with quarterback Brock Purdy. Purdy, 66% completion percentage, 3,760 passing yards for Purdy this year, 27 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, so a 3-to-1 ratio, and was sacked only 13 times. And Eric, I know you follow this stat pretty closely, but Purdy very, very good in the pass efficiency category. Purdy, number 20 in the nation at the conclusion of the regular season. Notre Dame's Ian Book comes in at number 35. So as we just offer a quick glimpse on the possibilities of this Iowa State offense taking on a Notre Dame defense that is number 5 in pass efficiency defense, what's a couple of things that stand out to you right away about that matchup on this side of the football?
Iowa State's offense is good at just about everything except for running the ball, and they're not as bad as maybe as their 95 ranking in rush offense would suggest. They average 4.4 yards a carry. They just don't see the point of running all that much. But you look, their ninth in pass offense, 21 in total offense, 26 in scoring offense, 20 pass efficiency, 9 in sacks allowed. So Brock Purdy has time to throw the ball. The one thing maybe that they're not good at on offense is third downs, and that may be because they have a lot of third and longs because they don't run the ball. But other than that, you look at that and you go, that looks like a team that has a lot more than 7 wins. And when you just rattled off the close calls they have, they probably should have had more than 7 wins. They probably should have been a 10-2 team.
Iowa State looking to win at least 8 games for a third consecutive year. The Cyclones have not pulled that off since 1976, 77, and 78. So they're trying to get to the 8-win mark. Of course, Notre Dame for a third consecutive year, they have reached at least 10 wins. So the Irish looking to add on with win number 11. And Purdy stirs the drink for this football team. You mentioned they don't run the football very well. Very early on in the year, Iowa State really had not found their go-to running back. And then game number 5 came around. They played in Morgantown against West Virginia. And they said, you know what? Let's take Breece Hall out of the oven. And let's put him on the field. And let's see what happens. And boy, oh boy, it didn't make Iowa State a dominant rushing football team by any stretch of the imagination. But that particular day, the freshman had 26 carries, 132 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Before that game, over the first 4 games, he had a total of 18 carries, but 11 were against Northern Iowa in the opener. When they lost to Iowa, he carried the ball, Eric, 1 time for 0 yards. So the freshman running back then plowed Texas Tech for 183 yards. He had 110 against Oklahoma on 18 carries, and then in the win over Texas on November the 16th, 24 carries for 101 yards. So there have been some glimpses of excellent rushing attack for Iowa State. They have just not been overly consistent, but once Mr. Hall got the football, boy, things changed right away, and the freshman made this Iowa State at least a tad bit more balanced, to the point where they knocked off Texas late in the year. And I know, Eric, Texas wasn't the same team at that point that they were back in September when everybody thought they were back at that point. Uh-huh. But still, pretty good day for Iowa State rushing the football against a Texas football team that's still above average.
Absolutely. And it's a wonder sometimes when you take guys out of the oven what they can do for you. You know, the thing that I really like about Iowa State's offense is they have 2 really good tight ends. Mm-hmm. Charlie Kohler is the guy that gets, the sophomore is the guy that gets most of the accolades, but Chase Allen's really good too. So there's some similarity a little bit in how they're set up. They spread the ball around. They've got Deshante Jones as their leading receiver, 5'10", 180 senior. But, boy, and again, they pass protect really, really well. And so this is going to be very interesting. The thing about it is, for Iowa State, they kind of play into the teeth of what Notre Dame does well defensively, because for the second year in a row, Notre Dame has a top 6 pass efficiency defense. And that's stunning because, you know, Notre Dame was nowhere near the top 10 for years and years and years.
And can I add on, their pass rush probably wasn't as good as we thought at the start of the year, but correct, yet they still ended up number 5.
Right. They still end up number 5. Maybe don't get as many sacks. I mean, they ended up at the end of the regular season 38th in sacks, 23rd for tackles for loss. But they did have a lot of quarterback hurries. They did force teams kind of out of their rhythm. And that dime package was money. There were a couple teams in the middle of the year that kind of seemed to start to solve it, and the Notre Dame made some adjustments.
They dented it.
Yeah, they dented it, and then it became just smothering again. And it was a very creative way to get a lot of snaps for Kyle Hamilton, who I think is going to be amazing. He's already amazing. I mean, when you look at his numbers relative to how little or how much he played, it's stunning what the kid did as a freshman.
The size, the first step, the IQ, the anticipation, makings of heck of a football player. And again, you don't see too many 6'4 safeties, first off, let alone move like that.
Right, and we talk about football IQ. His regular IQ, he is in Mensa. He is a genius by IQ level. So, I mean, we're talking about a very, very smart football player. Incredible work ethic. Have spoken with both of his parents. And you can kind of understand why he is as he is. He's just, and he's very, very humble. That's the one thing about him is. So he wasn't coming in with this entitled attitude. He said, you know what, I'm going to work for everything, and we'll see where the chips fall. And he's been a big part, and he'll be a big part of this bowl game.
Now, his dad, he's a spark plug. He gets fired up.
His dad definitely gets fired up, and his mom is incredible. She used to send him to academic camps, which he wasn't always thrilled with, but when he came home, she said, see, I think he was glad he went.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT in the Sports Beat app. 17 minutes after the top of the hour. Right now, focused on Notre Dame taking on Iowa State Camping World Bowl, December 28th at noon, right here on WSBT Radio. Eric touched on Kohler, one of two really good tight ends for this Iowa State football team. Kohler had 48 catches during the regular season. That was third best on the Iowa State roster. He also had 675 receiving yards, third on the Iowa State roster, but he was number one on the team in receiving touchdowns with seven. You heard a couple of those in our soundbite at the start of the program when Iowa State rolled by the Red Raiders of Texas Tech. Kohler, an all Big 12 selection, and he's playing excellent football late in the year. The Iowa State coaches are making him a big part of the game plan late in the year. He ended the season with five consecutive games with at least 70 receiving yards. So how well do the Irish match up against tight ends, let alone a guy like this that might be one of the better tight ends they face this year?
Yeah, they don't face a lot of teams that are similar to themselves. Obviously, they practice against it. You know, Stanford, Colby Parkinson was a standout for Stanford, and they didn't have the multiple tight ends like they usually do that are this good as Iowa State's are. Colby Parkinson's really good. It seemed like in that Stanford game, Notre Dame went with Kyle Hamilton a lot on Colby Parkinson, especially in the red zone. They wanted to keep him from getting the jump ball, so they put a 6'4 guy that could jump out of the gym on him, and that was a pretty good strategy. You know, once you're in between the 20s, my guess is Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is going to end up on him a lot,
like that.
The Rover. And so Notre Dame, again, is kind of built for this team. Now, how the second tight end comes into play, you know, Notre Dame was able to play against teams that tried to go bigger and they were – I think they had more trouble than anything against USC, especially USC in the second half, when there were three great wide receivers. I think Notre Dame is built a little bit better to do the tight end and two very good receivers. And so I think this is going to be a fun matchup because Iowa State just does it so well.
So let's ask Brian Kelly, well, Tyler James, your colleague, asked the question during the teleconference yesterday. Brian was not at a podium. He was on the phone for the teleconference as the Camping World Bowl announcement was made.
Maybe he was at a podium on the phone.
Maybe he was camping.
Yes.
After all the questions he got about camping, maybe he decided, you know what, let's pack our things and go camping. Oh, what has happened to the media? All right, so let's talk about Brian Kelly and his response to Tyler's question. With Iowa State throwing the football so well and Notre Dame number five in pass efficiency defense, Why is Notre Dame's pass defense so doggone good?
Well, Tyler, as you know, there's many components to that. I think we forced the ball out of the quarterback's hand very well. Our pass rush has been very, very consistent. I think that, when you look at those things, they have many components. The second component is, the way that we're structured defensively. We're a top-down defense and that we're going to keep the ball in front of us. I think we do a pretty good job with our safeties and making sure that they're staying over the top. And I think we do a really good job of tackling. Tackling is important and limiting those yards after catches. I think we've been really, really good at that. So, look, there are going to be opportunities to make some catches, and you're going to get your catches. But I think we've gotten the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly. I think we've done a great job of eliminating the big play down the field, and I think we get you down on the ground and tackle really well when you do complete the football.
That's Brian Kelly talking about why his pass defense has been so effective this year. You know what? They're pretty well coached, too. That's another big part of this whole conversation. Individually and as a group, great technique, well-schooled, execute well together.
You know, it would have been interesting. How much better do you think they would have been had Julian Love stayed for a senior season?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they could have been the best in the country, I think. If he played the way, as a senior, he did as a junior.
If Julian Love was still with the team, we would not have been talking about, is Dante Vaughn going to play that fifth game?
Right.
We probably wouldn't have talked a whole lot about Tariq Bracey and what he could mean to next year's team. And it kind of, that trickle-down effect takes place. Plus, I don't think his side of the field would have been very active. Troy Pride would have been a little more busy than he was this year.
And they probably would have kept Troy out into the field and kept Julian in the boundary, how they had it last year, instead of flipping it and putting Pride into the boundary, which wasn't exactly his strength, but he did a decent job. I'm not saying he had a bad year. He held up, but he didn't have a Julian Love type of year, which some people anticipated he'd move in that direction.
Well, the Irish ended up allowing 13 passing touchdowns in 12 games. That's a very, very good number. As we mentioned, Notre Dame wrapped up the regular season fifth in pass efficiency defense. And when you take a look at the playoff teams, Irish for fifth. Look at this. The number one pass efficiency defense in the country, the number three seed in the playoff, the Clemson Tigers. The number two seed in the college football playoff, the Ohio State University Buckeyes. The number one seed in the college football playoff rankings, the LSU Tigers. They're number 10 in pass efficiency defense. And oh boy, we have to go all the way down to number 48 to find Boomer Sooner, the Oklahoma Sooners. 48th in pass efficiency defense.
Which is better than they have been. But yeah, that's a dip. And again, I haven't never included the pass efficiency defense in my key metrics. I think it may be moving because of the way the game is moving. It may move into that. It, certainly when you look at the teams that are good at it, it tends to be the teams that are very successful. I think earlier in the BCS playoff era, it wasn't as much of a key metric. Mm-hmm. I think it's becoming more so.
I bet you Coach O likes his pass efficiency defense.
And I told him, I do believe you're the best football team. That's the first time I told him that.
There you go. See, he's right on
well,
with it.
Well, did you see Derek Stingley, the freshman corner for LSU? My goodness, he is incredible. Mm. I think he had maybe two interceptions in the Georgia game.
And just for a second, let me say this. How juicy is Clemson versus Ohio State in a national semifinal?
It's the dadgum mistake.
You're right, Dabo. It is. I mean, that is going to be one of the better matchups on paper we've had in the semifinals. We've had some great games. That Oklahoma game out in the Rose Bowl a couple of years ago. You had the Alabama-Ohio State semifinal was a great game the first year. But I'll tell you what. Ohio State and Clemson, kind of ironic when you think about the history of those two teams. What comes to mind for you when I say Ohio State and Clemson?
Well, I know my Ohio State friends don't want any part of Clemson and never do, because there was a bad blowout loss to Clemson that they still remember.
Well, I'm thinking of Woody throwing the punch against Clemson. Oh,
you know what? I actually talked to that guy years later. Charlie Bauman was the guy's name. I was ghostwriting a book for somebody on Ohio State football, and he was debating on whether he wanted to be a chapter in it, and he decided against it. But he told me the whole story off the record. And the part that I can share without giving away his confidence was he ended up moving to Ohio. He worked at a bank in Cincinnati, and he became an Ohio State football fan and actually went to games on a regular basis. But he definitely forgave Woody and all that stuff. But really, really interesting guy. I think he just, the spotlight, he didn't like it at the time, and he didn't want to bring it back to himself. But fascinating guy, Charlie Bauman.
Wow.
I was in a hotel room in New York City. I had gone out there. I was a student to watch Notre Dame play in this ECAC tournament in Madison Square Garden. And I saw it. And Woody Hayes, to me, was a hero growing up. And when I saw him punch that guy, I said, he's got to be fired. I was really angry. I remember that vividly.
I can't blame you on that.
Yeah.
That was very difficult to watch. And I think at some point, Patriots fans may have to go through that, because now there's new allegations that the Patriots in the Cleveland press box were filming the Bengals sideline. Remember, this happened against the Jets many, many years ago. And so here we go again with the NFL investigating the Patriots for misbehavior. At some point, if you're a Patriot fan, don't you have to just throw up your hands? I know you love your team, but my goodness.
Especially the Bengals. Come on.
I know. That's the funny thing.
What are you trying to film what not to do? That's crazy.
It's one thing if it's a major team like the Ravens, but it's the Bengals.
Yeah.
28 minutes after the top of the hour, Eric and Darren with you. When we come back, more on Notre Dame, Iowa State. What's at stake in this game for Notre Dame? Does a win or a loss mean anything? Also, Notre Dame basketball, a stunning loss to Boston College on Saturday. We got the My 5 question of the day coming up. It centers around the Camping World Bowl. So plenty of football and basketball conversation still to come. Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT and on the Sports Beat app. It is 26 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana on this Monday. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Great to have you with us. Opening segment, some opening thoughts on Notre Dame versus Iowa State in the Camping World Bowl. December the 28th, we're going to mix in some Irish basketball conversation in just a couple of moments, but let's keep the football conversation rolling here on WSBT Radio and on the Sports Beat app. So it's a bowl game for the Fighting Irish 1 year after being in the college football playoff. They are kind of the appetizer this year for a college football viewing day, which will conclude with the two national semifinals. You've got number one LSU taking on number four Oklahoma, and also number three Clemson versus number two Ohio State. The Irish start today with that noon kickoff against Iowa State. So from a Notre Dame perspective, what's at stake in this matchup against the Cyclones? You're a 10-2 football team. You've got a chance to get to 11. Is this more about next year? Eric asked this of Brian Kelly during yesterday's Camping World Bowl teleconference. And again, sound quality is a little amped because it was on the phone. So give a listen. Here's what BK had to say about what's at stake in this matchup against Iowa State.
Well, it's just like the last 5 games we've played. It's about a standard of play. It's about an opportunity where, you know, a lot of these
these guys will be playing for their last game with this team, and they want to play well. They want to play for each other. They want to continue to play at a high level, and so it's really not about you know, a lot of those different narratives, other than, you know, these are 18 to 21 year olds that are really focused on preparing and wanting to play well, enjoying being with their teammates for the last time this year. And not to make it much more complicated than that, they've done a really good job of avoiding a lot of kind of the different scenarios that are set up about, you know, how they should think. They really just think about preparing for the game and then going out and playing to a standard and enjoying it. And they've been great this whole time and, you know, waiting to hear who they're playing. And now they're just excited about this opportunity about playing one last game.
So how about a little follow-up question about this game once again? Is this the type of game that can be beneficial for next year?
I think there's obviously a lot of momentum going into your off season when you're able to win, you know, a bowl game and certainly do it against, you know, quality opposition, and certainly LSU was a, you know, a good football team. And I think when individuals have really good performances, it does that as well. Ian Book, Miles Boykin, obviously teamed up in that game to have, you know, big performances. So I just think it catapults you into your off-season training and conditioning. It builds a great deal of confidence as you, you know, get ready for the next season. So, yeah, no doubt there's some momentum there that you build off of it.
See, in the background, I can tell you're a fast typer. I can hear you clicking away right there. I appreciate Eric giving me the audio from the teleconference yesterday. Eric was a part of that teleconference with Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly. So you can look at this from a media's perspective, or if you want to put yourself in the shoes of Brian Kelly, I'll let you choose. What do you think is truly at stake in this game, if anything?
Well, I think Brian said the right answer publicly, and I think that's what he tells his team. And it's been what he's been telling them since they lost to Michigan, because the fan base was not only is your season over, but maybe are all the things that Brian Kelly did in 2016 starting to crack, show some wear? Is he really the guy that's going to get Notre Dame? And what Brian Kelly did was he got his team to focus on each week, this little picture, don't worry about what this leads to. And actually, you know, the college football rankings came out a week and a few days after the Michigan game. So it was, they had played the Virginia Tech game. They were 15th. In the final, they were 15th. Mm-hmm. They had a five-game winning streak. They beat a top 25 team by more than 30 points. They're 15th. So it didn't change their bowl trajectory. It didn't change their ranking. But I think what it did was it solidified where Notre Dame is as a program, the kind of culture and work ethic his team has, and I think that was important. Now I think in terms of this bowl game, saying that this is just about that goal, I don't think it is anymore. You know, Notre Dame has been the national championship picture twice in Brian Kelly's time, 2012 and 2018. Both times they played in a bowl in Orlando right before that. They lost the 2011 game and lost it in a terrible fashion, a come-from-ahead loss to Florida State. And then, interestingly, Notre Dame played for the national championship next year, Florida State the year after that. So then they played in the Citrus Bowl in 2017, at actually January 1st, 2018. Notre Dame wins that game. Notre Dame goes to the playoff the next year. LSU goes to the playoff the year after that. So it's funny that all those teams were involved. But it's about how you process your preparation for the game and you process what happened in the game. It's not so much whether you win or lose, although your fan base will chew you up if you lose this game.
They shouldn't.
It's about how you process this, how you fit this into your culture. You should work your butt off in the weight room whether you win or lose your bowl game. But you want to have that momentum. If your guys are kind of skating and say, let's go to Disney World and all this stuff, or you're in the mode of, I don't want to be at this bowl game. We didn't make the playoff, so this means nothing to me. This is an opportunity to still get better against a team that is going to test you in some areas.
this game for Irish fans will just be about whether their cornflakes will taste really good on December 29th or not, the day after the game. If they win, cornflakes are going to taste pretty good. If they lose, of course, you're going to be a little sour about it. When you think back to the LSU game, at the conclusion of the 2017 season, how much of that victory actually propelled this team to go on that run in 2018? Do you really believe, had they lost that game, that the result could have been the same?
I don't think the result probably changed things. I think it changed two individuals, though. I think it changed Ian Book and it changed Miles Boykin and how Brian Kelly looked at Ian Book. I think that, and Chip Long, because the way he performed against LSU, I think, was in the back of their mind when they made the quarterback change. And they made a quarterback change in 2012, too. It's interesting. Tommy Reese lost his job to Everett Golson in that offseason. Ian Book takes over for Brandon Wimbush game four of the 28 season. And I think Miles Boykin changed a moment into a big leap in his career. But I think not everybody did that from that game. And so I think the one thing where it helped was it quieted the criticism of Kelly. There's people that wanted, on my mentions yesterday, that wanted to fire Kelly because the betting line was only 3.5. Well, that's Kelly. He should be fired. So,
but see, what you're saying is it didn't have a major impact on the next season.
It
because
didn't.
Look at the Florida State game. You would have thought they would go 4-8 after what happened in that game.
The thing is, people say, well, we had that bad taste in our mouth, and that made us determined. But again, it's about staying true to your culture, building your culture, being invested. And in neither of those games was Notre Dame not invested. They were invested in both games. They did it the right way. What Miami did in the Sun Bowl in Brian Kelly's first game, they were not invested at all. And you know what? Miami, that was their culture in the next offseason. They stunk the next season. And so I do think that your approach, what you try to get out of it. Like, I think it's smart that Brian's going to look at younger guys.
Now, that's what I like. That's the one thing about this whole bowl process that is important to me. Brian mentioned that you're going to have, for example, you're starting 11 out there on defense, but there might be a couple of guys that get a day off, and you insert young guys. You don't want just 11 young guys scrambling around.
Right.
You put them in with the veterans to see what they can do. That is what this is all about for next year. It's not about the actual game to me. You can impress your coach, but overall, win or lose, one way or the other, you're going to motivate yourself for the offseason.
Right. I think that, and he mentioned in the Christmas shopping press conference part, that that Saturday's practice actually was going to be, he kind of contradicted himself a little bit, was going to be mostly young guys. One guy that's not going to be able to get work, unfortunately, is Cam Hart. He had labrum surgery. He possibly could be a starting cornerback next year, so that's going to hurt. But getting a look at the young corners, KJ Wallace and Isaiah Rutherford, guys that you're going to count on next year, you want to see Paul Mawala. Is he worth being a starter and moving a guy that's really good at playing Rover next year? So those are kind of the people, the running backs. I'd get Kyron Williams back involved. Is he better than some of the people that you have playing right now in that rotation?
If you win, fantastic. It's an 11-win season.
Yeah.
And that is great work by coaches and players and the entire staff. If you lose, it's kind of like something on your shoulder. You just wipe it off. No big deal, because it's not going to affect the offseason. Because the bottom line is, and I know I'm speaking for you, Eric, next year's Notre Dame football team, outside of the Goog, the expectation should be very high for this group.
Yep.
They are playoff caliber if everything comes together as we anticipate in 2020. My point is, if you beat Iowa State 42-7, 21-20, or you lose 42-7, it's not going to change that. None of that is going to change how we feel about what next year's football team is going to look like. It's about who played the best on that day, and it's not going to affect next season.
Right.
No
but
way.
But I do think the process is important.
If the process is, yes.
Yeah, if you had seniors on your team slacking going into this game and the young guys see that, I think that's bad for your culture. But I don't expect that. I think Notre Dame will take this game seriously.
I do too.
And then let the chips fall where they may. But
if they would have quit, they would have quit after the Michigan game.
Exactly.
They're not going to quit. Now you're going to Orlando to have fun, be with the guys, be with the team one more time. I'm not worried at all.
I would agree.
All right.
And a good coaching staff at Iowa State.
Who just got a big contract extension. The head coach did. Maybe that's why he was late for the teleconference. He was counting his money. All right.
Or maybe he was having some crawfish.
Could be. That could be what it is. There's nothing like crawfish for dinner, that's for sure. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm glad we went to Mike Anderson and ate crawfish that night.
Thank you, Coach. All right. When we come back to my five question of the day, and it centers around Eric's piece today in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. I'll explain next on 96.1 WSBT and on the Sports Beat.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's how things work. I ask a question. Eric comes up with five answers. Number one is the best answer. Today's question centers around Eric's piece in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com titled, The Beauty of Notre Dame's Camping World Bowl matchup is what it may lead to. Aha. So, we're asking Eric the five top things this game could lead to for individuals or the team. Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is number five.
Well, I went with individuals instead of parts of the team that I think could benefit from this process. And I went with Braden Lindsey, the sophomore receiver from Oregon. He's just kind of coming into his own now. I think he could be a big part of the game plan against Iowa State, who's a decent defense. They're not a great defense, but they're a decent defense.
Four!
Number four, I'm going to go with Tariq Bracey. Tariq is the most experienced cornerback who's going to be coming back next year for Notre Dame, and he's going to have to share time with Dante Vaughn against Iowa State's good receivers. But Tariq needs to show up in this game. If he wants to be a starter next year, he needs to show that to the coaching staff.
The top five things that the Camping World Bowl could lead to for individuals on this Fighting Irish football team.
Number three.
I still don't know what movie that's from, and if anybody knows, email me, because Darren won't tell me. Javar Armstrong, he, in the Stanford game, finally started to show little traces of what we thought he could be, and we need to see big traces of it in the bowl game, because next year you're going to bring in Chris Tyree, you're going to add Kyron Williams back in, there's going to be more people that want the football, and he's got to show that he's still in contention to be that number one back.
Number two.
Number two, I think this is kind of the perfect, I think it's the perfect game for Ian Book. And I'll tell you why. You know, Ian Book still has not been able to knock down a top 25 pass defense or a top 25 total defense. Iowa State is just in the top third of pass defense, so it's good enough to challenge him, not enough to kind of overwhelm him. But if he has a really good game against that kind of defense, I think this is a positive step forward.
And this is about process, right? Not just the game.
Correct.
Okay. So I'm thinking Kevin Austin might be number one.
Number one!
Well, if he were playing in the game, Kevin Austin would be number one.
Because he's practicing.
He is practicing. I think he would be Notre Dame's number one receiver.
Okay.
I would have had him on this list. We'll do a different list of the people that won't be playing in the game.
Number one!
And this guy won't be playing in the game either, but he will be coaching it, and that's Jeff Quinn.
Ooh.
I think that for Notre Dame to be a playoff team next year, their offensive line has to take a step forward. Now, pass protection, they were outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a run standpoint and from a collective, this is how good they are. We didn't see that this season for various reasons. This is his chance to kind of collect now that you've had a chance to get used to two new starters on the offense to get them. And one of those starters was wearing a Santa suit at Meijer the other day. That was Trevor Rulin. And he looked skinny in it. And I asked Brian Kelly what happened. He said they got him a Peloton.
And there's never been a Santa with more surgeries in the history.
I would say probably two-thirds of the kids were scared of the Santa.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, that's the My 5 question of the day. Check out Eric's article in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. It is now 5 minutes in front of the top of the hour at 96.1 WSBT and on the SportsBeat app.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, this is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame is moving on to the Elite Eight. Taylor, he stopped! Notre Dame wins!
Luke Leitner and Smallbone have been the catalysts for South Bend St. Joseph's.
Jalen Smith verbally committed to play football at Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame is going to Omaha for the first time since 1957.
Rebound, run wall, middle. Score! The Irish are going to the championship game!
Congratulations, Tom, on the championship.
Thank you. We brought one back to South Bend, finally.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske win the Daytona 500.
Leitner going to try to sneak it ahead.
Can't express how sorry I am towards Matt Tain.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
I don't pay a damn bit of attention to what people on the outside say, because I understand none of them, though.
York now. In front, Ogilvie. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four!
The Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
The Fighting Irish are national champions in 2001. Notre Dame! Notre Dame! Notre Dame is the national champion.
Is that the play that will seal the playoff bid for Fighting Irish?
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Hour number two of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat for this Monday. Sean and Darren from our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. We've had football conversation over the first hour. We will mix in some basketball talk. Stunning result on Saturday, as Notre Dame always beats Boston College, but not the case at Purcell Pavilion on Saturday. And now you just have to wonder where some of these victories are going to come from in the highly competitive ACC. At the start of the year, you put W next to the game against Boston College.
Absolutely.
And now you got to steal one back somewhere along the way. So we'll get to some basketball conversation in just a little bit, plus rapid fire here on WSBT Radio. Hopefully you enjoyed your vacation time, first off.
I did, for the most part.
Except for the football game you
That's
went
right,
to, I know.
Except for Thursday.
When your Cowboys got off to a good start against the Bears, and then it was downhill from there. And I sent Sean a still shot of Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner, in his box at Soldier Field with the hands over his face in total frustration.
We had my binoculars, and we were kind of, you know, looking, checking the sideline before the game started, and Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones were down there, of course, for everyone to see. He's always got to be on display. They were down there on the field, and Jason Garrett came by and shook his hands and all that good stuff, and all the goodwill ended fairly quickly. I mean, a 9-minute touchdown drive the first time they had the ball, you're right, was feeling really good. Not after that. But it was, but otherwise, it was nice to have a little time off, almost too much time. You know how that goes sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's like you go, and then you get to this point, and then you're like, what do I do now when I'm sitting here twiddling my thumbs with nowhere to go?
I have projects at my house that I got a year and a half ago that I've been wanting to do, and that's coming up over the next couple of weeks.
So you're working on those.
I'm going to work hard. I'm going to redo the kitchen and the painting in the living room.
Man.
So
you got all kinds of big
cabinets
stuff.
Are going to be changed, so it's going to be a major, major process. But tomorrow I'm watching my son play basketball, taking an extra day off just to go watch him play, because I don't get
That'd be good.
Very often.
Absolutely.
All right, Camping World Bowl. We knew that was going to be the destination for Notre Dame. We had mentioned Iowa State as a possibility. Oklahoma getting into the playoff, bumped up all the Big 12 teams a notch. So Texas was taken out of a opportunity for the Camping World Bowl to take them, because I think they went to the Alamo Bowl.
Sounds right.
So 7-5 Iowa State is the opponent for the Fighting Irish. It is the first meeting in school history. Iowa State one of four teams in the Big 12 that tied for third place with records of 5-4. The other three teams, Texas, Oklahoma State, and Kansas State, Iowa State went 1-2 against those three teams. And during his Camping World Bowl teleconference yesterday, Brian Kelly had this to say about the Camping World Bowl invitation and taking on Iowa State.
Obviously, it's run by the Florida Citrus Sports, and we're well aware of how well it has been run. President Ken Robinson, CEO Steve Hogan, we're very familiar with them being there in 18 at the Citrus Bowl. So our players are excited. Our university is excited. We've got a great matchup with a very, very good football team in Iowa State. Matt Campbell's done an incredible job. The football team that he has this year is a record-setting football team. I think they lost four games by maybe 1 point. So it'll be a great challenge for our football team. I think it'll be exciting. I know they travel well. We travel well. It'll be a great kickoff to the college football playoffs with the first game on. So, again, very excited about this opportunity, and our guys are looking forward to playing.
All right, BK's excited about this matchup. Are you excited about Notre Dame-Iowa State in the Camping World Bowl?
I don't know about excited, but I think at the very least it should be an entertaining bowl game between these two teams. I mean, when you look at the offensive numbers that Iowa State has put up this year. Brock Purdy, almost 3,800 yards and 27 touchdown passes. They throw the ball around a lot. They don't necessarily run the ball a lot. And then you've got the pass defense that Notre Dame has, and they've proven to be one of the better pass defensive teams in the country this year. So it's a strength-on-strength situation there. And, I mean, the Big 12 is not known for defense by any means. Iowa State, over the last few years, has probably been one of the better defensive teams in the Big 12. They don't have great numbers there this year, but it should be a team that Notre Dame should be able to put some points on the board against. And I think when you look at it from the bottom line, from the Camping World Bowl's perspective, I think they've got to be pretty happy. It sounds like tickets are already selling in Iowa State. I mean, a lot of Notre Dame fans don't care about that, but you know, you're going to be in Orlando. You're kind of the undercard for the college football playoffs that day. So you go from the Camping World Bowl between Notre Dame and Iowa State and then right into the playoffs. As we're wrapping up the post-game show that day, that first college football playoff semifinal will be starting.
It's not a supermodel matchup. It's not overly sexy. Notre Dame-Iowa State. But I do like the fact it's the first time they faced Iowa State. I like newness. Newness is fun sometimes. Yep. So I like the fact they haven't played. I respect Iowa State because they played one of the playoff teams, Oklahoma, in Norman. It was 42-41 Oklahoma. Iowa State, I believe, went for two in that game at the end and got stuffed. So they played a playoff team to 1 point on the road. The team that Oklahoma beat to get to the playoff in the Big 12 title game, Baylor, they went on the road to Waco and only lost 23-21. Now, Iowa's not necessarily a fantastic team, a really good, solid team, not great offensively. An 18-17 loss to the Hawkeyes, so they have played good competition very well, and their best win, that win over Texas, 23-21 in Ames in November. Texas was on the downside of their season. At that moment, doesn't take anything away from what Iowa State did in that particular ball game. But I think having a guy like Purdy at quarterback is going to be an interesting challenge for this Fighting Irish defense that has been so good in pass defense this year. And Iowa State's pass defense is just good enough to challenge, I think, Ian Book in this game, just to see if he can continue his really solid play of the last four games.
Yeah, I mean, and it's going to be a better opponent because I think when you look at it, you look at the quality of Iowa State, as you mentioned, all the close games that they've had, they're probably good enough that they easily could be like a 9-3 team, and maybe they'd be in the Alamo Bowl, and it would be Texas that Notre Dame was playing. But, I mean, they're probably on par somewhere kind of between Virginia and Virginia Tech. And, I mean, I realize the ACC championship game and what Virginia did against Clemson kind of left a bad taste in everyone's mouth, but I think that's one of the three elite teams. Oklahoma, I don't know that they're elite this year, but they're at least at that next level. They were good enough to get into the playoff. I think there were three really good teams this year. Some teams like Oklahoma that were all good enough maybe to be in that number four spot, and then a lot of other teams. So I that's how the rest of the top 25 shook out. I think Iowa State's probably on par with that Virginia Tech around there.
After watching what LSU did to Georgia's really good defense,
yeah,
do you think no LSU kidding. Is licking their chops with Oklahoma's defense coming up in a semifinal? Mm-hmm. They enter their bowl game 48th in the country in pass efficiency defense. Now, I know they play in a conference where there's a lot of offense, but they have not seen anything like Joe Burrow and LSU. That may not be a lot of fun for Oklahoma. To me, they're not one of the four best teams in the country, but who else are you going to put in there at this point? It's tough.
Yeah.
I think Georgia's actually better, but hey, they got handled by LSU, so it's hard to argue Georgia. I know they have two losses, but yeah, if Georgia played Oklahoma, I'm not sure Oklahoma would decisively win that game.
Yeah, they all played in conference championship games, so they all had to kind of go through that extra game, and Oklahoma came out on top of it. It took overtime, but they came out on top in theirs.
We almost had a couple of quarterfinals in the bowl games.
Yeah.
It had that feel.
The way it worked out.
When we come back, we're going to shift gears to college basketball and the disappointing performance for Notre Dame against Boston College on Saturday. We'll get to that storyline coming up in a couple of moments. Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT and on the
baseline to the right of the Irish basket. 1 point, they've lowered it to 1.5 seconds. Pfluger has the ball. Pfluger gets it to Goodwin. Goodwin, half court shot. Oh, short and to the left. And for the first time in 14 meetings, BC has defeated Notre Dame 73-72, breaking Notre Dame's 13-game winning streak.
First win for Boston College in South Bend since 1997.
My goodness.
And with the Irish coming off that rough offensive performance against Maryland earlier in the week, it felt like this was the perfect remedy for Coach Bray's basketball team. Take on the team that you pretty much whooped for the last decade, the Boston College Eagles. And at some point, if you're the Eagles, you probably are like, enough. And they came out shooting the ball extremely well, held on for dear life, and beat Notre Dame 73-72. Boston College hit 12 of their first 16 shots from the field. They forced 9 of Notre Dame's 11 first-half turnovers to take a 12-point lead, 31-19, with 8:21 to go in the first half. And ultimately, Boston College led by 10 at halftime, 38-28. Notre Dame never got all the way caught up, got to within one. You heard Jack Nolan's call of the final play. And the Irish fall to the Boston College Eagles. They're now an 0-2 basketball team in the ACC, and we had questions about the team going into this game. Now it feels like there are some questions that you're really now concerned that you know the answers to, but it's kind of very difficult to talk about at this point. And this feels like a low point. It's been a long time, Sean, since we've been at this point with the Notre Dame basketball team. You had the three NIT years back in the last decade, and I don't think it felt like this, because this is really the first time I felt like I wonder if there's an answer that can come about and turn around this season. You know, we've seen this group of players for a year and now 2 months, and they're just not giving us enough consistency on offense and the defense. They had trouble defending Boston College early on. It just feels like they don't have a strength right now. When you have something, when you're in a tough spot you can go to, I don't know what that is. right now. Hopefully it's T.J. Gibbs. He had a really good game, and after going 0 for 11 against Maryland, he had 22 points. I know he missed the free throw late, but maybe that's a bright spot. But right now you wonder where the offense. And now I think at this point, Sean, the confidence, where it's going to come from for these group of guys. They've been through a lot the last year and a half.
No, I know, and that's the thing is this is essentially the same team as last year, and when you had all those freshmen, the one thing that you could point to, no matter how bad it got last year, was we've got all these freshmen, so the one silver lining is they're all going to have experience, they're all going to be back next year, but we just haven't seen marked improvement in cohesion, in scoring, consistency, a lot of those different things that you were alluding to. They're a 30% three-point shooting team right now. And that's the biggest thing to me because Mike Bray's teams over these two decades now have always shot a lot of three-pointers, and sometimes they've lived and died by them. But they've got looks from three this year. They've got so many open looks from three. You can go back to that North Carolina game when they opened up, and the analyst, I can't remember his name off the top of my head right now, but he was talking about it like, you got to go away from this. You can't keep shooting. Well, it's like, have you ever seen a Mike Bray team? They're going to shoot threes, and they're getting open looks, and he's not going to tell his team to stop shooting threes when they're getting open looks, and they're still getting open looks, but they're just not hitting them for whatever reason. And that's what they've always been able to hang their hat on and where they've kind of been able to catch fire offensively and get a little confidence and kind of get on some rolls is because they've been able to hit some threes. But, you know, speaking of that North Carolina game, I think that there was kind of a feeling like, well, even though they lost, it was a close loss on the road at North Carolina, maybe this could be a starting point. Maybe there is something there, but it obviously hasn't been. And then when you look at what North Carolina is as well, they've lost three games since then. That's not the North Carolina team that we're used to seeing.
That's
over
what
the
I've
last
been saying. Their front line did not look very impressive.
No. So, and it's just, unfortunately, since those two Elite Eights, it's been another step back in each of the years that has followed since then. They lost in the second round of the tournament the next year. They had a fast start, suffered the injuries the next year. Bonzi Colson, Farrell was injured as well. NIT. Last year, they don't even go to the NIT, just the second sub-500 season Mike Bray has ever had, and now they're off to this start. And, I mean, you lose to Boston College. You had three wins in the ACC last year. Two of them were against Boston College. Yeah. So it's not a real bright outlook right now after dropping that game.
Well, half of their shots were three-point shots against Boston College. Mm-hmm. They went 8 of 29. They had 58 overall shots. 39% from the field, 27.6% from the three-point line. And when you think about the group of players that Mike has right now, there is very limited ability to create your own shot off the dribble, which is going to lead to, I don't think settling is the right word, because the three-point shot has been a big part of this program for a long time, but it makes it more of a necessity to have a really good percentage from the three-point line when it's sometimes very difficult to create your own shot. Just as an example, and again, this is a guy coming back from ACL, but Pfluger shot a very quiet 38% from the three-point line last year. Now, I know he only played half the year. That's a really good number. Right now he's at 27%, so that's a drop-off. When you think about T.J. Gibbs' career at Notre Dame, 32% as a freshman, 40% as a sophomore. Then last year as a junior, he was at 31%. Now he's kind of in the middle of those last 2 years. This year he's at 37.3%. You can live with that particular number. And let's just go to one more player real quick, Prentice Hubb, who got off to that fast start against North Carolina. Last year shot 26% from three. He's up to 33% so far this season. So it's an improvement, not probably where you want it, considering how many three-point shots that he takes, but he has improved. So there's a couple of the guys that have actually shot better, Gibbs and also Hubb, but it's just not resulting in the type of offense that you're looking for. And I think Tom Noy from the Tribune has mentioned this on the program, and that is you're going to have to score over 70 points in these ACC games to really have a chance to win against the upper echelons and even, I think, middle of the pack basketball teams. Now, they got to 72. They had to really, pardon our pun here, but a little rapid fire there at the end.
That's true.
To get back into the basketball game and nearly stole the doggone thing because Boston College started getting a little tight around the throat, I think, as they tried to give that game away. But this is a stunning loss. This is a game I thought they would handle things, get back on track. You're 1-1 in the ACC. You get that good feeling back. Being at home, you win that game. And I'm not saying they were going to go 500 of the ACC from there, but at least it gives you a little building block. Now you take on a bad Detroit team Tuesday night. Unfortunately, it's one of those games, if you win, you're supposed to. If it's close, oh my gosh.
Right.
It's going to be, the world is ending. You got UCLA coming in on Saturday, and my goodness, you got Indiana coming up, who's playing really good basketball right now. They beat Florida State in Bloomington in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. Then a winnable game against Alabama A&M, and then you start the gauntlet of the ACC. And honestly, I mean, there's games you can win if you play well. Syracuse is not playing well right now. You play them twice very early on in the ACC season. Now, Louisville, that's a different story. At NC State, it's going to be tough. At Georgia Tech, I mean, at this point, it's going to be tough. But you're right. When you mentioned the BC wins last year, you missed an opportunity to win one of those games you feel like you had in your back pocket at the start of the year. Now you're going to have to scramble. Now you really got to scramble to start stacking those ACC victories. And I hope they can build off the way they finished, but I worry about their confidence because this group has been through a lot mentally. And let's play a soundbite if you don't mind.
Okay.
Mike Bray after the game gave Boston College credit but put a lot of the blame on his shoulders for the way his team played and ultimately losing to Boston College. Give a listen.
You know, I think it was my worst week as a coach here at Notre Dame. Absolutely my worst week because – and I told him that. I said, I think I didn't do a very good job preparing us for Maryland and even in the game, okay? And then we come back Thursday and we're moping a little bit because we got our butts whooped and we got a guy down. And I didn't push at it or address it. And again, I don't think I had a really good week helping our guys. And again, there's some leadership from within and everything. And God, we turned it over 15 times. I mean, we were throwing it all over the place. Sometimes that comes from within as far as, well, nobody cares. Nobody cares about if you lose a guy or whatever. Nobody cares.
So the follow-up question was to Coach Bray, is he saying he wasn't hard enough on the players following that loss to Maryland?
I'm not sure I was plugged into the vibe enough to kind of feel that on Thursday a little bit. We rested because we got back at 1 in the morning and we didn't really do a lot. But, you know, I don't think I really sensed that till shoot around this morning. We practiced pretty good. I was like, you know, and then I thought we played that way. And again, I don't want to take anything away from Boston College. Boston College came out loose, playing, shooting, hard to guard because they got all, you know, kind of quick guys out there. The big guy was gone. So it was tough matchups for us at times. The zone saved us. We went zone just to, you know, because we couldn't guard them. But I'm disappointed. I couldn't be more plugged in.
Well, when you are a coach with a lot of collateral, you can take the bullet for the team in moments like this.
Right.
Mike has a lot of collateral for the success he has had at this university for 20 years. And this is one of those moments, to me, as a coach, you take some of the heat off your players and you put the target on your back. It's not fun to do, but it is a way to try to keep your team's mental state as less fragile as possible. If he came out ranting and raving in the press conference about his team, that's not going to do any good.
No.
And because of the loss itself to a team that got hammered by Northwestern in Chestnut Hill during the Big Ten ACC Challenge, you knew there was going to be a lot of criticism and questions about how can you lose to this team. So I appreciate the fact Mike, to me, took the bullet for the team. Now, maybe some of the stuff he said was true. I think it's Mike standing in front of his team, standing in front of the bus for his team. But you do worry. I do worry about the psyche of this team. Again, it's just been such a struggle for a year and a half. It wears on you. We're going through that with hockey right now. Last eight games, they're 1-6-1, and in eight games, they've scored 13 goals. No, and now it's in their head, and they're struggling, trying to make beautiful plays like in the Hall of Fame. Your brain can get in your way, and that's what I worry about with these basketball players going through what they've gone through.
And that's what, when you look at the entirety of the week for Notre Dame, hockey lost twice, men's basketball lost twice, women's basketball lost twice. I don't know the last time that has ever happened at Notre Dame when all those, you might have to go all the way back to the 80s for each team to lose each of those three teams to lose twice in the same season. And back to what Mike Bray was saying, nobody cares. He was obviously referring to Robbie Carmody is out with the injury. You lose a player. Chris Doherty decided to transfer, so you know you're two down there. One of your teammates is done, but Mike Bray was saying nobody cares. I think what he was referring to, nobody from the outside, or nobody on the other side anyway, nobody that you're playing against cares that you've lost these guys. BC was down a guy too. Nobody's going to feel sorry for you. I think that's kind of what he was referring to. You can't feel sorry for yourself as a player because no one you're playing against is going to feel sorry for you. They've got their own things that they've got to take care of as well, so you've just got to find a way to get out there and figure something out. And as we've referred to, the climb at this point is not going to be easy by any means. So it's a long way for them to get some things figured out.
Tough part about your statement is the fact that hockey was playing the number five team of the country and the women were playing the number two team
of the country. Oh, yeah. There's a difference, but at the same time,
this one stings more because it is a very winnable basketball game considering BC looked horrible at home against a struggling Northwestern basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
Irish and Detroit Mercy, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock tip at Purcell Pavilion. The pregame at 6:40 right here on WSBT Radio. And then the boys from the University of California, Los Angeles will be here on Saturday. Rapid Fire comes your way next, 24 minutes in front of the top of the hour at WSBT.
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
Darren, of course, in addition to Notre Dame's bowl and all the other bowl matchups yesterday, the College Football Playoff Selection Committee moved LSU past Ohio State and into the number one spot in the rankings. With fellow unbeaten Clemson coming in third and then one loss Oklahoma. So do you think they got it right? Do you have any problem with the top of the ranking there and how it affects the matchups?
I don't think my mind changed that there are three teams that are head and shoulders ahead of everybody else, LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, and the fourth team is going to be just the one kind of coming along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
Like the little brother that comes along with all the big guys and he just sits and watches. So no matter if it was Utah, Oklahoma, Baylor, I just think there's a big drop-off. In terms of the order, I don't have a problem with it. I think Ohio State has a better analytical look. LSU has a better look on the field, especially with the way they played against Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I can't argue a whole lot. I think things fell into place pretty easy for the committee this year.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I mean, you know, I think what it came down to, not for the selection committee, but what it comes down to for LSU and Ohio State, would you rather play Clemson or would you rather play Oklahoma? It doesn't really matter now, but I don't think anyone wants to play the defending national champs who are sitting here at 13-0, but Ohio State labored to get past Wisconsin. LSU did not struggle to beat Georgia. And I think when you're looking at minor things, I think that had to be it when all was said and done. They both had to play quality opponents, and LSU handled its opponent easier. It was their fifth win over a top 10 team this season. So I think they got it right. And you know, it is a playoff. And as they say, if you're going to win the national championship, you're going to have to beat more than one team. You'd rather, I think, again, play Oklahoma than Clemson if you were either one of those two teams. But it should be some fun matchups no matter what.
Not going to be shocking if Clemson doesn't win at all. And I've been on the Ohio State bandwagon since September. They're the best team, but I'm not sure with the way Clemson is playing right now if that's the matchup Ohio State is best suited for.
Yep. I agree with that. Do you think it is good or bad for the college football playoff that Alabama will not be in it this year?
They're not one of the four best teams, so it's good. Plain and simple. If they were in it, it would be a sham because they're not one of the best four teams.
Well, yeah, so. And I'm not trying to make a case for Alabama. I'm just saying this is year six of the college football playoff. Alabama had been in the playoff in the first 5 years of the playoff. So just from that standpoint, do you think it's better as far as interest, any of that kind of stuff?
I guess I'll just say no, just because my kind of point is I want the four best teams, and Alabama's not one of them this year, so the heck with them. They're not worthy of being even in the conversation, so I'm happy with the four teams we have.
Yeah, and again, I mean, year six, Alabama had been in it the previous 5 years, including the last 4 years playing for the national championship. So I do think that there's some Alabama fatigue, even if it is LSU. It's not like it's an unknown or anything. Notre Dame got in for the first time last year. I think that was good. I think it's good that some new teams are getting in there. There's almost, I don't know if there's necessarily Clemson fatigue, but maybe we're getting close to that, especially if they do end up winning it all again this year. Oklahoma, I don't think people are necessarily happy to see them because just because of the overall strength of the Big 12. It's
exactly.
it's kind of like my team in basketball, Kansas in the Big 12. How good is the conference from top to bottom? I definitely think it's good that we're starting to see some new teams kind of mix their way in there.
Yeah, Oklahoma is just frustrating because I don't think the Big 12 is that good, but yeah. Who else are you going to put in there now?
By default. Yeah. Yep, I think that's exactly what it also goes to, had Notre Dame just not completely laid an egg, there would have been an interesting conversation for them to be sitting there with just one loss.
Yeah.
But ifs and buts. All right, fill in the blank. Lane Kiffin being named head coach at Ole Miss is blank.
I think it's fun. I think it's fun to have Lane back in the good old SEC. He can stir the pot a little bit. I think coaches with great personalities are good for all sports. That's why I love watching LSU, because of Ed Orgeron and the way he cheers and applauds and chest bumps his players, high fives them, has a great personality. It's great for college football when you have that. So I'm totally in favor. And that's why, you know what? I was always just fine with Coach Kelly getting ticked off on the sideline. That's his personality.
Yeah.
I don't want him to fake it. So that's why I always appreciated Coach Kelly's intensity on the sideline, because it brings personality to the game. Just because his face got red, who cares? I mean, that always drove me nuts.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree with that.
It's all calm and nice now, so everybody's happy, I guess.
I've said it before. Yeesh. When the Purdue coach goes nuts on the sideline, nobody cares because he's at Purdue. But because the Notre Dame coach, and because he's at Notre Dame and they're on national TV, it's a big deal.
But I'll tell you what, back in the day for Purdue basketball, when Gene Katie threw a fit, nothing like that. I like that. I miss those days. That's fantastic.
When he went crazy and the hair went one way and the other way. That's right.
Be thrown.
That's right.
That's what I miss. That's what I like Izzo. He's got a lot of spunk to him on the sideline.
That he does.
With players and officials.
I tell you what, as far as Lane Kiffin goes, it's going to be interesting with him in the SEC West, along with, you know, he's got Alabama, he's got LSU, he's got Auburn. So it's not like he's in an easy division of the SEC by any means. And it'll be really interesting when he and Nick Saban go head-to-head on Saturdays for the next few years, however long he lasts there. He's been a Division I head coach for 8 years now. Oof. He's not really Saban. Or not Saban, but Kiffin, not really done anything of note, but he keeps getting these jobs. It's not like they had a big signature victory at Florida Atlantic. So I think it was a little bit of a head-scratcher to me, even though he had a nice record, 21 wins in two of the seasons. I think he had 26 wins overall. 21 of them came combined in 2 years. He hasn't necessarily done anything of note, but he's got the job at Ole Miss, and he's going to get a big paycheck for it.
Haven't had a chance to look this up. Maybe it's been announced. Maybe it hasn't. Wonder if Charlie Weiss Jr. goes with him. Offensive coordinator.
I've seen some speculation about that, but I haven't seen any answers. So
right. Let's take a quick timeout. We'll do a little more rapid fire on the other side.
Got one question, then we can
dabble on
when we come back.
Yeah. All right, very good. 13 in front of the top of the hour. WSB, Sean and Darren with you. 9 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Let's wrap up rapid fire.
One more question, and it's a baseball question. Darren, after Steven Strasburg re-signed with the Washington Nationals today, over under 1.5 more high-profile moves that'll be made at this week's Major League Baseball winter meetings.
High profile.
Not just your run-of-the-mill, I'm trying to think of, you know.
It's hard to find a cut-up point, but I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, that's.
Gerrit Cole is going to sign
by the end of the week
in San Diego. Yes.
Okay.
Rendon will not, because the market is still developing for third baseman, despite Moustakas going to Cincinnati, where he'll play second base.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that's it. I think everybody else will wait, so I will take the under.
I think I'm leaning in that direction as well, because I saw a list today, and it's kind of, you know, Cole would still be a huge one, obviously, if he goes this week, but the really, I don't think Rendon would probably be the only other one. Didi Gregorius, I think, is a free agent. I don't think that happens by the end of the week. So I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm thinking maybe Cole happens because I think it was kind of a matter of which pitcher is going to sign first. He was going to set the market for the other guy. I think there's a good chance that Cole goes, but I'm thinking under as well. I just don't think that enough is going to happen. I mean, just the fact that Strasburg happened this quickly on day one is pretty big. You think Cole ends up with the Angels or
Yankees?
You do think he's going to go Yankees?
I do. The Angels are the type of team, when they set their sights on someone, they will pay whatever they need to. Josh Hamilton, Albert Pujols.
Right.
And I think they'll try to do that again with Joe Maddon as their manager. You got Trout in his prime. Ohtani, you got to try to put something together. They just don't have the pitching staff, and Cole would anchor that group. But I think this is a moment the Yankees, the one thing they are missing is an ace. They have everything else. This is where they go all in.
Yeah, I guess it'll for him it's going to come. We all know that the Boris clients tend to go for the biggest paycheck regardless of where that is. But you also, how much is this whole Southern California connection for him going to weigh into it for Gerrit Cole? He's from there. He pitched in college there at UCLA. There's been all this talk, even when he was with the Astros, that's where he was going to end up. So that's I'm really interested to see. The Yankees do want that big gun. The last time they got one, it was CC Sabathia. Didn't necessarily pay long-term dividends for him, but they need it to put him over the top.
Here's my question. With Josh Donaldson of the Braves being a free agent, third baseman, Anthony Rendon is the prize third baseman from the Washington Nationals. With those two still on the market, does it help or hurt if the Cubs are trying to trade Chris Bryant? Because with all these contracts coming up, there's no doubt they are going to prioritize Javier Baez as their big money guy, which makes Bryant susceptible. He's a Boris client.
Yeah.
You don't know if he's going to have that extra year of free agency or not, because there's litigation right now still looming over that. So I'm just wondering, if Rendon and Donaldson take a while, does that help or hurt the Cubs?
Good question.
I don't know the answer.
Really good question.
Don't know.
Yeah.
That's rapid fire. It is 6 minutes in front of the top of the hour and 96.1 WSBT and on the sports.